Our main speaker for this evening, Joe G from LA.
Hey everybody, how are you? My name is Joe G. My home group when I'm in San Diego is Claremont Men's on Thursday night. It's here for Claremont Men's. Come on, I know there's some of you are here. My home group when I'm in Los Angeles is the Men's Fifth Tradition Stag meeting in Redondo Beach on Monday nights. It's been a long time since I've been in a meeting that there are women in the meeting. All my meetings are with men's stags, so it's a little bit different for me. I really want to thank Gary for asking me to come in and speak tonight. That was kind of unexpected, but I'm totally unprepared. I've only known about this for about 6 or 7 months. I'm kidding. I'll start off by saying, thank you, Michelangelo, for sharing your story. I listen to people's stories and I try to see the similarities, and there's a lot of similarities in our story, so thank you. I'll start off by saying I was born and raised here in San Diego, over in Paradise Hills. I was born at Paradise Valley Hospital. They say that you come back to where you originally started. I'm a little concerned about that because Paradise Valley Hospital is now a sanitarium. Not sure I'm digging that. But I had a great childhood. My parents were awesome. But when I think back, for as long as I can remember, I think it was probably about 5 years old is when I started really, knowing what was going on around me. And I think back, and I don't ever remember wanting to be a kid. I always wanted to be a man. I always wanted to be an adult. I wanted to hang out with my dad. I wanted to hang out with the guys. I wanted to hunt. I wanted to fish. I wanted to drink. And that's just the way that I felt. So, a lot of people say I kind of drank because I didn't fit in. That really wasn't my story. I mean, I just remembered that I always wanted to be an adult. I wanted to be a grown-up. And, my dad was really cool. He was a heavy drinker. I would say he was probably an alcoholic, functioning for many, many years. But I was his drinking buddy. So, we used to go out in the garage, and I'd be 5 or 6 years old, and we'd be making shotgun shells. And, that's what we did. We made our own shotgun shells. And I remember sipping on his can of Coors all the time. And he finally said, damn it, quit sipping on my beer and get your own. And so I did. I remember, like it was yesterday. I went in and I got a can of Coors, and I went to the, went back to the workbench, and I drank my first full can of Coors. I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and I just took the garage out for a spin, It's like, and two things dawned on me that very moment. I mean, the two things that will, would last for, for my whole career, drinking career, and that was I finally understood why adults drank beer, and number two, at that moment, I knew how I wanted to feel all the time, all the time. And, so from the get-go, I remember I wanted to get loaded. And people ask me, how long I've been sober, and I would say, well, I had 5 years sobriety, and then I had sporadic sobriety between the ages of 6 and 9. And then I just drank at 9, It was like, at 9 years old, my dad got tired of buying me Coors. So I got to get my own 12 packs at home. And here again, it was all about, drinking at home. As long as I was drinking at home, I got to get Lucky Lager. Lucky Lager came in 12 packs in bottles, but they had the coolest puzzles on the inside of the lids, man. It was great. So I got to drink the Lucky Lager. My dad got to drink the Coors. On special occasions, he let me have another Coors. But so after I was sober for quite some time, my mom asked me if I thought it was strange when I was a kid that I would go over to, Little Johnny's house and I would never be invited back to little Johnny's house. And I never thought much about it. And she said, yeah, we used to get these phone calls from these moms. And, you know, I would go over to little Johnny's house, and, you know, mom would ask me what I want to drink, and I would always say Coors. And Johnny didn't get to play with little Joey G anymore. No. And so, but I never thought anything about it because that's what I drank at home. I always drank, when I could, Coors, but it was really Lucky Lager. So my story also is a little bit about my relationship with God. So just for my own participation in a meeting, how many of you here have less than 2 years of sobriety? Raise your hand. Oh, wow. We have a lot. And there's a reason I'm going to ask this. How many of you struggle with a higher power? I will tell you, this is my story about my relationship with a higher power. So when I was 5 or 6 years old, I remember my parents took me to church, and I was in, you know, Sunday school, and man, I hated it. It was terrible. And as a little kid, you know, your parents are always telling you God knows everything. And so I was sitting there in Sunday school, and I'm thinking, oh man, I'm in trouble because I'm hating this stuff. And so I remember getting out of Sunday school, and I tripped down the stairs and broke my 2 front teeth. And I thought, ooh, God does know. Yeah, he knows. And so so I really didn't get off on a very good foot with him. And then a couple years later, my grandmother got very, very ill. And I remember going to see her in the hospital, and she had cancer. And I remember praying and praying and praying, and you know, to God to help her. And she died. And I thought, oh man, God does not like me. And another year later, my grandfather was very, very ill. And I prayed and prayed and prayed for him to get better, and he died. And so it was right then that I quit praying to God because I knew he didn't like me. And I made a deal with him that I would never bother him again. And I didn't. And so it's interesting when people talk about, you know, they prayed that, you know, they would wake up, they were so miserable after a bad night of drinking, or they pray that God would take this away from them. I never did that. Because I did not have a relationship with God whatsoever, because I knew he didn't like me. So here I am, I'm, you know, now in, I'm going to say high school. I don't remember much of high school, but I got through high school. And I knew at 16 years old I was an alcoholic, but I was okay with that because I was having a lot of fun. I'm telling you, man, I was having a good old time in high school. And I got into racing motorcycles out at El Cajon, and we had a good group of guys that we used to race motocross, and so that kind of got me, you know, interested in racing cars. I raced cars at El Cajon Speedway and drove Demolition Derby, and I just am a total adrenaline junkie at this point in time. And I still am to a certain extent. My sobriety, just to go back, a little cleanup, my sobriety date is January 10th, 1989, and I graduated high school in 1975 from Grossmont High School, and I went into the real estate, I went into the real estate business in 1975 right out of high school, and in 1975 in the real estate industry, everybody drank and did other things, and so I fit right in. I mean, I was hitting the ground running. In 1975, I was 18 years old. I met a guy at work. He was my best friend. He was 21, so we had no problem getting our alcohol. We drank, and a year later, from the age of 19, I had my dealer from the age of 19 till I got sober when I was 31. So I never had to worry about where to get stuff. I always had it available. I personally tried everything and anything I could get my hands on. But I really have a preference for accelerants because they allow me to drink more. And that's just the way it is. And I did an awful lot of those. And because I love to drink. Love to drink, love to drive fast. Just having a good old time. And so here I am now. I'm 18 years old. I'm working, making more money than I've ever made before. And I, for some reason, I don't ever seem to have a bank account. But I'm making some good money, you know. But it's all going to lots of fun things. And it was funny, we were talking about having a fake ID. I never needed a fake ID when I started working in downtown San Diego. In 1975, all the people that I in the building that I worked with went to this one Mexican restaurant in downtown, and we would go to the bar there. And then at this time, I have hair down to my butt, and I walk around with a marijuana belt buckle on, and you know, I'm a hippie. I'm just a hippie. And so, and I'll go a real quick story. So the guy that interviews me for this job, come to find out, he's an ex-Kentucky state trooper, and I go into his little cubicle, and he looks at me, and he says, "Is that marijuana on your belt buckle?" And I said, "Yes, sir," and he goes, "Oh, okay." Didn't think anything about it. So I go over to the first day, I go into this bar, this Mexican restaurant, I go to the bar, and I sit up at the bar, and the guy comes over, and he gives me, you know, like, "What are you having?" And I said, "I'd like a gin and tonic, please." And he said, "I'll tell you what. You go get a haircut and come back and see me." Okay, cool. So I went and got a haircut. I got about this much of my haircut off, so it's still down to about here. I walked in the next day, and I said, "I got a haircut." And he said, "What are you drinking?" And I said, "Gin and tonic." And he served me from that point on. And so when I turned 21... I said, "Hey, today's my 21st birthday." And he looked at me and he goes, "Whew." That's all he did. So it was, I was able to drink, you know, all the time. I never had a problem getting alcohol. I never had a problem getting my accelerants. And now I'm well into my career by now. Here again, I'm still making quite a bit of money and I'm really starting to see some of the side effects. I'm going to go back just a little bit. So in San Diego, California, when you turn, so we were all looking forward to being 16 years old so we could get our driver's license. And you had to have an adult in the car with, you know, until you were 18, you had to have an adult in the car when you had your permit. But you could ride a motorcycle by yourself. So I had a motorcycle at 15 and a half years old, and I was Mr. Independent at 15 and a half years old. And my parents, I would go weeks and weeks without seeing them. Not that they really wanted to see me. But I wasn't really in trouble, and I was still going to school and working. I worked since I was 14, but I was on my own, and I loved it. I had a great time. So now I'm, you know, so I really have never driven sober at any particular point in time in my life. I was always loaded, and I got my first DUI about a month after I turned 21, coming home from a Padre game. I couldn't really talk too well because I'd been yelling at the Padre game, and the guy pulled me over, and it was Iowa Patrol, and it was in Lemon Grove. He was pretty nice, though. He did pull my car off the freeway so it wouldn't get towed. That was my first DUI. My second DUI came about probably 3 or 4 months later. And then on my third DUI, a couple months after that, I had gotten a hold of Jacoby and Myers. Kobe and Myers. Now, back when, this is probably in the late 70s, early 80s. And back then, you know, getting a DUI, you kind of just pled it to like a misdemeanor. That was it, really. And you paid a fine and you were done. It wasn't like it is now. And so my third one, I get this attorney and he goes to court and I called him up and I said, so what did they say? And he goes, well, it was the weirdest thing. They didn't have you on the docket. And I said, well, you didn't ask them about me, did you? You know? And he said, no. And so I went to my dad. My dad at that time had remarried and his brother-in-law was a sergeant in the vice squad at San Diego PD. And so he went to the sheriff's down at the jail and the sheriff looked at, he said, hey, I'm looking about this, you know, this guy. He said that he got arrested for DUI, but he never got to court. And the sheriff said, oh, crap, we forgot. We missed it. We'll send it back. And this vice guy said, and he just kind of gave him the, no, we're not going to do that. And I didn't realize what kind of an effect that had on it until the next time I got pulled over. And I had a beer between my legs, and, you know, I'd already had probably, you know, half a dozen empties in the back. And highway patrolman, I gave him my license, and he came back, and he said, get your ass home now. And I went, wow, that's pretty cool. And I didn't realize, but they had tagged me as working for the vice squad. And so now I'm getting pulled over all the time, man. And it's like, yeah, no big deal. And they tell me to go home as soon as I can. And so I probably had about 20 DUIs that I didn't really get. Maybe a mixed blessing, I'm not sure. But, yeah, it was pretty crazy. And so I'm... My career at this particular point in time in the real estate industry when I first got, you know, started and my career was going up and up and up and now I'm about 27 years old and my career seems to be going down and down and down and down because I'm getting worse and worse and worse. I'm drinking 24/7. I'm just an absolute mess. And I remember, I think it was in October of 88, I was so ill that I was, so I would get up in the morning and, you know, I would try to get rid of the shakes and I came up with a brilliant idea because as soon as I would try to drink something, I'd just, you know, puke blood everywhere. And so I thought, I'll start drinking in the shower because I'm already in the shower and I don't have to clean up the mess. And so that worked pretty good for a while. And so I was really starting to feel the effects of all the drinking and using it. I'm smoking crack at this point in time every day. And I'm really starting to feel, you know, it's really starting to take its toll on me. And so I remember I had to go to the hospital. I was trying to get to the hospital, and I was going to Mercy, and I parked, and I'm crawling to the emergency room. I'm crawling down the sidewalk because I can't walk. And it was at that point in time that I finally looked up in the sky, and I said, if there is anything up there, I need some help. And I just left it at that. And I went to the hospital, and by this time I have been disowned by my parents, both my mom and my stepdad and my dad and my stepmom. They'd all disowned me. I really have alienated all relationships that I have, except for my buddy that I met when I was 18, who is still my best friend. And I will tell you that just that little tiny crack of I call it my moment of clarity. That little tiny crack, I guess God came in and said, okay, you've had enough. Because it set in motion a series of events that I would never have done for myself. I would never have done that. And it was about this time that I started well, I don't know what it would be called dating this woman at work. I think she looked at me like a project. You know? I think she goes, wow, that guy's a project. And so I think we started dating, and you know, here I am. I'm now being thrown out of my palatial crack estate at 28th and Broadway, and so now I'm homeless. But I still had to work because I knew I had to work because I needed the money. And so I decided that I would go to see a counselor and see if I had a problem. I didn't know if I really had a problem, but I would go to a counselor and see. And so I would never have done that before, but here again, now I'm willing to go see a counselor. And so I sit down with this counselor, and I really tell myself, be as honest as you can with this counselor. Just be honest. Try to tell him what you do every day. And so I started off in the morning, you know, drinking in the shower so I could get, you know, I wouldn't have to clean up. And the guy looked at me and he just put his pen down and he just kind of listened, you know. And after I got to about noon, he said, stop. I think you're a prime candidate for our program. And he said that it was a 12-step program. Now, I'm clueless. I mean, I've had people tell me I need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous since I'm 16 years old, and my idea of Alcoholics, and I would sit there and look at them and go, why would you want me to go to that? Those are those old people, old men in, you know, trench coats, drinking out of a brown paper bag in some basement of a church somewhere, smoking cigarettes. And I'm like, why would you want me to go there? I didn't understand. And I had no concept of 12 steps or the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was completely just foreign to me. And so he said, do you think you would want to go to this 12-step program? And I'm thinking, 12 steps, then I can drink like I used to, you know. I could drink like other people. So I said, sure, I'll do a 12-step program. And so I went back to work the next day, and I went to see my HR person. And my HR person, I said, I have to go away for 30 days. I need to go to this rehab. And I need to see if my insurance company will pay for it. So I remember sitting at my desk, and she called me, and she said, your insurance won't pay for it. And I couldn't afford $10,000 at the time. And so I hung up the phone, and I remember thinking, I tried. I'm good. I'm going to go down in flames like I always knew I was going to. Because that's just my lifestyle. I remember my dad, when I was 18 years old, my dad, for my birthday, gave me a 357 Magnum. I'm not sure if there was a message there or not. When I turned 21, he said, I never thought you would live this long. Yeah, he said, I thought you were going to kill yourself or I was going to kill you. So people at work would always ask me, when are you going to get it together, boy? And my pat answer was 30. When I'm 30, I'll get it together, because I knew I would never live to be 30. I knew it. I just knew it. Well, now I'm 31. 30's gone, came and gone, and now I'm 31 years old, and I am really a mess. And that's when I hung up the phone with my HR person, and I thought, okay, you know what? I knew I was going to go down in flames, and that's cool. I was very at peace with that. And she called me back about a half an hour later, and she goes, I've really been thinking about you. And she said, this is October. And I'm like, Halloween? Okay, and she said, no, this is October. This is when you can change insurance companies for next year. And she said, I found an insurance company that will pay for your rehab. And I went, wow, that's amazing. Now, at this point in time, I still have no concept of God. None. I don't realize how God is working in my life at this particular point in time. So I hung up the phone, and now I'm pissed. I'm like, I just got off the hook and boom, now I got to go to rehab. Because I really don't want to go to rehab, you know? So anyway, I suited up. I remember that I had, I went to my manager at the time and I said, hey, I got to go away. And he said, don't worry about it. You're one of my favorite employees. You don't have to worry about it. Your job is here when you get out. You go take care of yourself. I'm not even going to take you off the payroll. I'll pay you while you're in there. You go get well. That's pretty amazing. And so then I went to my best friend that I've drank and used with every day since I was 18 years old. And I said, hey, you know, because they tell you that you got to change everything. You have to change all your friends. You have to change everything. So now I go to my best friend and I go, man, I gotta go to a rehab. And he looked at me and goes, yeah, you should do that, man. It's like, yeah, you know, because he was never quite like me. He was, you know, he's the kind of guy that, you know, we knew we were going to the river in a week and I would give him stuff to save and it would still be there. That would never happen with me, you know. And but so he was never quite like me. He could, you know, he could drink like a fish, and then when it was time to stop, he would stop. And I just never had that gene. It was not in my makeup. So he said, yeah, that would be a good idea for you. I think that's something. And he goes, but you know what? If my best friend can't drink or use anymore, I won't either. And he's never had a drink or drug since. That's a pretty good friend. And I don't know how he does it, because he doesn't have a program like we do. I mean, our program is a program for living, you know, how to live without drinking and using. And he doesn't have that, but he seems to get along just fine. I don't know, it's kind of normal. I don't get that. So I go to rehab, and first few days, you're in this kind of stupor because they keep you pretty well, you know, inebriated so you don't go into convulsions and all that good stuff. So first 3 days were a little bit of a blur, but then we went from the detox portion into the big house, you know, the rehab house. And so I get over there, and the first thing they do is they get you in a group. There was about 20 of us, and there was a woman there who had a big 17 on her necklace, and she told us all at that meeting, at that very first meeting, that if you had any chance of being sober, you have to find a higher power. You have to have a power that you believe in that's greater than yourself. It's like, oh, this is going to be tough. So we all go out to a meeting that night. I'd never been to an AA meeting before. And I hear people talking about how I was feeling. I'd never heard anybody talk about how I felt before. And it was kind of a little bit, you know, freeing that people felt the same way that I did. And so I thought, well, maybe this AA stuff isn't all that bad. You know, I didn't see anybody in a trench coat. They weren't drinking out of brown paper bags. So it was kind of interesting. It was nothing like I thought it was going to be. And so we go back the next day, and we get in this group setting again. And she said, so how many of you found a higher power last night? And every person in the room except poor little Joey G raises their hand. And I'm here again. God doesn't like me. So I was baffled. I was completely baffled that all these people were able to find God last night. And I looked at the guy next to me and I said, where the hell did you find him? Was he under your pillow? I don't know. I don't get it, because I don't feel any different whatsoever. None. I don't feel any different. I don't have any. I got nothing. And so I was very frustrated. Well, obviously, fast forward, I realized that every one of those people are just blowing smoke up the counselor's butt. But I don't know that at the time. I'm trying to figure out how to not drink and use anymore. So here we go. I went to the McDonald's Center in La Jolla. And they bus us around to the AA meetings around, and and I'm starting to become very more comfortable with this, and now I'm starting to get some hope that there is a different way to live than what I've been doing. And I had never had that hope before. I never had hope that I would be able to be a normal human being. I was a broken human being, but I knew I'd been broken for a very long time. And now I'm broken, and I don't have my mechanism, my coping mechanism anymore. And so now I'm starting to try to figure out how life works. And I'm 31 years old, and I'm scared. I'm really scared. So it was interesting when I was in rehab, you know, for the first few weeks, you know that you're there for 30 days. The first couple of weeks, you feel safe. You're starting to get some food in you. You actually put on a little bit of weight because I was like a freaking bean pole. And so now I'm starting to feel a little bit better. And I'm starting to think, you know, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do this thing. And so as we get closer and closer to getting to the end of the 30 days, now I'm really starting to get scared because I do not know how to live without drinking and using. I've been doing it every day since I was 9 years old. I have no higher power. I still, at this particular point in time, don't have any concept of a higher power. I don't know. I'm doomed. So what they told me was we had to have a plan when we left, you know, what meetings are you going to go to, what are you going to do for a sponsor, all these things. So I get out on a Thursday, and they tell me to go to this meeting at Claremont Men's. It's a men's meeting. So here I pull up. There's 100 men at this meeting, and I am scared to death. I'm a scared little boy at this point because I'm terrified. Because I don't want to go back to that life that I had. And I don't know how not to do that. So I come up to the door, and there's a guy there by the name of Big Earl. And Big Earl is blind as a bat. And he has glasses that are about this thick and about this big, and it makes his eyeballs look like minions. Nope. Swear to God, man, and I'm just scared, man. I'm walking up, and I said, is there an AA meeting here? And he goes, yeah, come in, sit down, and shut up. Welcome to Claremont Men's. And I'm just like, okay. So I go in there, and I start going to, they say you go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So I went to probably about 110, something like that, in 90 days. I'm an overachiever. So I'm going to this Claremont Men's, everybody. Now, I don't have a sponsor. I'm now going to this every week. I do get commitments. I'm going to meetings because it's the only thing I know to do to keep sober at this point. And so at this particular point in time, I'm befriending this one guy that I start sitting next to week after week. His name is John B. And John B. is one of those guys that we just gravitated towards each other. He's funny. And, you know, he had about, I think he had about 6 years when I met him. And we just started, you know, going to dinners and whatnot before. It was time for my two-year cake. And I asked John to give me my two-year token at Claremont Men's. I still don't have a sponsor. I still don't have a higher power. I'm just kind of hanging on by the skin of my teeth. So we get up there, and John says, you know, I don't sponsor Joe, but I wouldn't mind sponsoring him. I've gotten to know him. Now, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I thought, ooh, if I ask him, he won't turn me down. Because the reason I didn't have a sponsor is because I didn't know if I could take the rejection of somebody saying no. That's how fragile my sobriety was at that point. I really truly feel that if I were to ask somebody and they said, no, I can't sponsor you, I'd have been at the liquor store. So I didn't ask them. I didn't ask anybody. And that way I just kept coming back. So I asked, so I asked John to be my sponsor, and John took me through the steps. And that's when my life really started to get good. My life took a dramatic change for the better when I started working the steps. And it was, I don't know, it was probably shortly after my fifth step that I was driving down the freeway one day, and I was just thinking about stuff, and it dawned on me that I should have been dead 50 times in my life with the stupid stuff I did. Stupid. And I had that moment. I had another moment of clarity, my epiphany, that God had been taking care of me my entire life. My entire life. And from that moment on, I have had an unwavering faith in a power greater than myself from that moment on. Unwavering. I don't question it. I look at what he's done for me in life. My life today is unbelievable. I mean, there's some guys in this room that I've known for a very long time. One of my sponsees is here. I've sponsored him for a very long time. He knew me way back when, and he was a mess. He was a mess. And he said, yeah, but I wasn't as bad as you. Because he knew me back then. And then I met my buddy Kenny at Claremont Men's not too long after I started going there. And Kenny and I have been business partners. We go hunting. We go fishing. We go, we had families together. We had, it was made, okay, I'm going to go back. So that girl that I was dating that took me on as a project, we just celebrated 29 years of being married. Thanks. It was interesting because here again, I do all these things that I'm not supposed to do when you get sober. They said, oh, don't have a relationship for a year. Well, I went in January, I got out in February, and I got married in May. It worked so far. She's talking about where we're going for our 30th, so I think I might make it. She was very instrumental in helping me and being very supportive. And we had one son together. He's 27 years old now. He's never seen his dad drink or use. And, man, he's a chip off the old block. He's 27 years old. He has 10 years clean and sober. Yeah. He decided to be a casual heroin user. Probably broke his anonymity, but he could have came and defended himself, but he's not here. So here again, man, I will tell you that just this program has given me a life beyond my wildest expectations. They used to call me No Show Joe, and I have about 250 people that report to me now, and I'm there for them every day. And it's pretty amazing. I get a chance to do a lot of cool things in life. My son and I went on he just got a road bike, so we went on a 40-mile bike ride today, and we just enjoy each other's company now. And it's great to have that relationship with him. And I don't know, I from where I came from and the gifts that have been given to me, I would say that of all the material things that have come to me, I don't care about those. I do, but I mean, it's not the important thing. The important thing was that through this program, that obsession that I had every waking moment, that obsession was removed. And I haven't had to think about that for a very long time. I've gone through a lot of stuff in life sober, and not once has it ever occurred to me that taking a drink or using a drug would make it better. Not once. And so when I see all the things that come down the pipe at me, I think about worst case scenarios, you know, if something, you know, obviously I've gone through the death of my father, my mom and stepdad are starting to age, you know, I'm going to have to deal with that pretty soon. But none of those things scare me. I'm not afraid of life. And life is very cool. Life is a trip. Serious. I've had two different ones. And this one is way better. Way better. This really is the easier, softer way compared to all the things that I did to try to get loaded. You know, I turned into really a broken piece of shit. Excuse my French. But I was really bad. And now to sit here in front of you guys on a Saturday night, I really want to thank you for letting me come share my story.